Welcome to the Protect Connect podcast, after party edition, UFC 207. We've been drinking, and you've been warned.
Hot air hangs like a dead man from a white oak tree. People sitting on porches thinking how things used to be. Dark night. It's a dark night. Dark night. It's a dark night.
What is up, you savages? This is the Protect Your Neck podcast, and I am Dan Tom, your host, martial arts analyst and writer for MMALatestNews.com, as well as MixedMartialAnalyst.com, where you can find the entirety of my work. And that site also hosts this here podcast, the Protect Your Neck Podcast, a podcast dedicated to breaking down high-level MMA pre- and post-UFC cards, both technically and all the beauty and techniques and intricacies of it, but as well as the gaming side. And so we're not just a breakdown podcast, which that's no hate. I love breakdown podcasts. I listen to many breakdown podcasts. But we will also be doing weekly top fives, which you can use the hashtag The Protect Your Neck Podcast to submit any questions or your top five list. For example, me and Robin Black will be sitting at another undisclosed location. Isn't that the word of tonight? At a bar somewhere, actually. And we will be discussing the top five BJ Penn moments. So that's going to be fun. Look out for that. But that's not tonight. Tonight, something else happened in Vegas. Tonight, a little thing called UFC 207 happened in Vegas. And we're going to dive deep into it. Here to help me is my man, my main man, one of my best friends, Brian Schoonhofer at BR14.
Schoonhofer.
All right. Maybe we'll get that story later once you get to know us better and we have more drinks on us. But yes, at BR14, he is a fan of this sport for over a decade. He has been attending UFC shows for over a decade. So he will be providing that aspect and more, as he is my man to bounce things off of. I'm usually at his humble abode to watch these fights when I'm not at the events. So thankfully he's here with me in this inaugural episode, which is not supposed to be an inaugural episode. Yeah, it was a good time, man. So we're going to get down to it. We're going to get his opinions here. And we're going to start from the bottom. It ended on such a great note. Let's end on a great note as well. And let's start on a weird note. Tim Means versus Cowboy Oliveira. Quickly, I guess, before I get your thoughts here, Brian, I'll give you my pick and kind of the setup here. This was our first recommended prop on MixedMartialAnalyst.com for my breakdown. This was a tight fight on paper. Me and you both like both these guys, and it was justifiably, you know, tight from an analyst point of view. Forget who you like, okay? That's why the recommended prop was one unit for minus 120, that this fight does not go the distance. Sadly, I was right on multiple aspects of this fight, but won't be getting paid for any of it because it went to a no contest for something that, by the way, real quick note, was illegal and will still be illegal in 2017, folks. The only thing that the rule changed that we all were mistaken and were being referred to by the mistaken Ratner and Joe Rogan was a three-point position where your hand is on the ground and you're playing the game. That's not what happened. Unfortunately, it was the knee, and it's stated in the rules. Illegal shot, so let's count it as a blessing that we just don't lose the money altogether, right? I guess there's a positive there, but it really was a weird ending. But before that, I think Tim Means was getting the better of it. The reasons I said, a lot of people thought that Cowboy would win, which is probably why the line shifted from him going from an underdog to a favorite. But a lot of people thought he would out-clinch him and out-wrestle him and grind him. But the thing was, it wasn't going to be like his Will Brooks fight that we saw. And Will Brooks is really good, but Will Brooks is dependent on creating space. And he went into that fight saying, I got to create space or bust. And when he couldn't create the space, well, he ran into an onslaught.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's not Tim Means, though. Tim Means can get out-wrestled. He could have gotten out-wrestled at this fight in one of the universes that this fight took place in, for sure. But I guarantee you, in every universe that this fight took place in, Tim Means fights back because he can fight from the clinch.
What a nasty individual Tim Means is.
Legally or illegally? Well, what was your feeling? I mean, my feeling was Means, obviously, from the clinch, and that kind of showed, I guess. But what was your feeling, Brian, going into this fight and coming out?
You know, we've had this conversation many times about the Dirty Bird. That guy can put on a show, man. That guy is a fighter's fighter. He comes to bring it. He is violence brought to you in the human form. That guy will bring it in all levels. The elbows, the clinches, his home. So to see Oliveira kind of try that aspect of things was interesting. And like we've said, Oliveira brings it. The dude brings that swagger and that flavor to the octagon just on his entrance alone. He brings a vibe that a lot of guys don't. Maybe a la Cowboy Cerrone does, but that is kind of before rather than during. But besides the point, Charles Oliveira is not a guy to mess around with. He definitely brings it. And Tim Means messed up here. Obviously, we know it wasn't the right thing. But we agree both that Tim Means had this in the bag, regardless of the outcome.
Yeah, and by the way, Oliveira looks fine. There was a picture that was posted of him after this where he's got, you know, the IV, he's getting medical checked. And that goddamn smile is back on his face that he walks out to the cage with. Just, you know, the
unbreakable confidence in that man. Well, and it's all because of ladies. That guy's ladies.
Well, how about the unbreakable hip driving, Brian? That unbreakable hip driving on his way to the cage. That smile, the hip driving. I mean, you want to talk about, I pontificate about his clinch game, because I honestly think, you know, Cowboy Oliveira, by the way, people, he was a former bull rider. So there's a certain core of maintaining your balance on a just explosive animal like that. That does seem to translate to why he's so strong in the clinch and why he's such a strong clinch fighter. But you want to talk about powerful core. Cowboy Oliveira impregnated 3 different women on the same street. If that doesn't say powerful core, Brian, what else does?
Impressive. And maybe even explosive if we want to get down to the nitty gritty here. But besides the point, that may be where the unbreakable confidence comes from. That guy is strutting down the street with swagger for days. I hate to even use that word, but is there another word to describe it? It's that. It's this guy comes in there with that confidence that no matter how tough you are, you're kind of like, wow, that guy thinks he's going to win this fight. I have my hands full. So it was good to see Tim Means rise to the occasion. Unfortunately, he could have waited a little bit longer for the ladies.
Yeah, he could have, and you know, hopefully he'll look back once emotions kind of cooler heads prevail, and he'll realize, well, at least it's not a DQ, it's a no contest in a fight that, you know, he was winning. Well, it's hard to say with the regime changes, but I was going to say the UFC is usually good about kind of wagering that in how they feed their bonuses, how they match you up next. In other words, they try to treat wins how they should be treated and losses how they think they should be treated, that's despite great. What the commission says.
It's great.
It's great, but man, I'm scared. It's another, yeah. I'm not trying to open that can of worms and get sidetracked here, but with the buy and the move that the sport is moving in, man, I'm afraid we're not going to see that mafia, you know, envelope, smile, have a good day, wink, wink feel that we got from the Fertittas. So moving on to the FS1 main card, not much to say about this fight because this fight was number one on my fights to avoid list. This was Brandon Thatch versus Nico Price. There's not a lot out there on Nico Price.
Unfortunately.
You're probably only able to watch about 3 or 4 fights if you really looked. And I thought he had a really good chance, although I picked against him here.
So did he come into this fight as a heavy grappler? Because like you said, I wasn't
grappling
very
is his strength.
Well
grappling is his strength, and that's kind of, but the and stand up, he looks like he was well trained. He's doing the right things fundamentally, absolutely. But he didn't have that smooth. I don't want to say he was herky-jerky to the point of a Diego Sanchez and start disparaging some guy's technique who's in the UFC.
He was a little awkward, but not in a bad way.
Yeah, and that's what I saw on tape, and that's what I had a hard time. It was kind of came down to that similar thing, which we'll get into later with Rousey, where with Thatch, it was more of a mental thing. I mean, he clearly has the athletic intangibles, and even as a martial artist, you know, from his father, Clarence Thatch, and he definitely has a natural movement, you know, the stuff that you can't teach that only gets ingrained in you or you have naturally. And I don't know if Price will ever get to that level. That said, Price was more than capable of beating him. That's why it was on my avoid
list. There's an obvious difference between the two. I mean, Brandon Thatch on the feet is a very scary individual. We kind of rode the train of the hype when he first came into the UFC. Not to say anything negative about his performances as of late, but there's a very obvious weakness in his game, and it's grappling. And like you had spoken of earlier, it's his hip placement and the things that he decides to do in those moments. You know, it's it's a little bit out there. It's not where it needs to be.
Yeah, absolutely. What Brian's trying to say here is, I actually tweeted earlier that he'll do some really good things. Like, he'll isolate a 2-on-1 wrist control, which he was doing, and if you grapple, especially, you know this. It's very difficult to choke someone with one hand, and more so if you can isolate a wrist and disrupt a grip, even if it's just one wrist, one grip. You take out 99.9% of passes and advances as well. The problem was is that Thatch would isolate that grip, and his hips would just stay dead in the water. I mean, as Nick Diaz would say, day one shit. I mean, fundamental stuff. And I'm not saying that, again, I'm not trying to do bandwagon and stockpile on a man's shortcomings there. But, I mean, 4 submission losses in a row, if that's not enough to say it, I'm just kind of giving the technical reason, at least, why I see things I see there.
Yeah.
Clear fundamental holes that don't make sense. You should not have this level without having this taken care of first, right? You should not be worrying about the finished carpentry and painting of your house and your floorboards when you haven't even laid your cement foundation. This just does not make sense.
You're right.
And that's what...
But that's what he came in as, was a striker.
Yeah.
That's what we saw. True. This very fearsome striker. This guy brought a lot to the table, but then he was exposed by a smaller man in Benson Henderson, and that's kind of when it started, you know?
But it's just tough to see, though, because he trains with, you know, doesn't just come from a good lineage and have good genetics, but he trains with Elevation Fight Team. There's great guys there from Elliot Marshall, Leister Bowling, who sadly retired because he had great advice for Dillashaw, which I guess we'll get to later, but really sad. But anyways, Thatch probably going to be out of the UFC. Price gets the win here. Let's move on with that one too. It probably an even harder one for us to touch on. It's Las Vegas locals.
Something
fans
we
forever.
Don't want to talk about.
And me being an extreme couture guy, it was hard to see Alex Garcia take out Mike Pyle. Now,
in the fashion he did, especially.
Exactly. Now, I did, I'm going to break down, I stated my bias here. I stated my bias because even though he's with Syndicate MMA and no longer with Extreme Couture, I do know Mike Pyle from back in the day. He was awesome, man. I mean, he was one of those guys that didn't matter if you're an amateur or not, he would help you with your game. He would teach you lessons. And even if they were hard lessons, I think I still have some burn scars on my knees there from Pyle using me as a demo to other pros on how to keep a guy grounded from turtle against the cage and beat the hell out of him. That
and to
was
check
fun.
The oil, right, Dan?
Check the oil, yeah. He taught me what checking the oil is. That's a real thing, by the way. That's not some sick, perverted porn crap. That's in wrestling, checking the oil. It's gross. But it's part of the game. Yeah, Mike Pyle, if I put it this way, if my ass got grabbed at Extreme Couture, one of two people, it was my former coach, Neil Melanson, or it was Mike Pyle. That being said, he really was an awesome dude, but all that bullshit aside, even if I didn't know him, there were tangible paths to his victory here. Just to simplify it for y'all, if he didn't get knocked out in round one, he had all the tools to finish it in the rest of the fight. I mean,
Garcia was fading.
Garcia tends to fade, and he tends to take his breaks on top, where Mike Pyle is dangerous. He's one of the few guys who actually does have a legitimate guard. He tried to work it. He almost got close a couple times.
I
thought he was arguably going to win the round. I want to get your opinion here in a second here on what you thought was going on before the finish, Brian. But, he was typical. He threw the leg kick and got caught with his head upright. You know, I hate to say it, I love Pyle, but the chin taking shots and this and that.
He got greedy with that knee.
And that, his head kind of just floats there a lot when he's attacking. He has so much more options than all these guys offensively. But defensively, that is the one thing that I always worry about. And unfortunately, it showed true tonight. I mean, what did you think going into it? What did you think during and after?
So the thing about Mike Pyle is that guy is a legend. He's been around for a long time. This guy is a Hall of Famer. Before he's there, we already know what's going to happen. It's this. It's that. It's kind of stuck in that old school way, man, where it was stand and throw. You versus me. Technique aside, let's put on a show. So that's kind of where I feel like it's just old habits that are not going to go, you know, very willingly. I think that there's no tougher men than these guys, these old school guys that just, they were tough men when tough men didn't exist. And it's hard to see him go in the way that it is. And hopefully this isn't the last Mike Pyle, but he was winning this fight up until that point. I feel like, yes, Garcia was landing, but at the same time, Pyle was landing that body shot, man. I feel like a couple more of those could have changed the trajectory of the fight, but you know, like I said, we're pretty fortunate enough to be there for his great performance against Spencer, because that was something something real special with the spinning back fist and the overall performance of a 40-year-old man. It was good to see.
You're right. It's good to take the positive from that. But, man, it is no country for old men in this sport. No. It is brutal. I mean, this would have been a perfect fight for Pau to go out on in his adopted home, you know, Vegas now. Big show. Turnover, Joe Silva's last show. He represents that era, you know, first two fights against John Fitch and Rampage Jackson. And in no holds barred days, on the sport was referred to as NHB in 1999, by the way. I mean, this would have been perfect, but that's what I was saying earlier. This is on a show previous. God, I've done a lot of shows this week, but I was saying that. No, I said that this is like, I gave this example, and not even talking about Pyle. Like, this is a sport where, like, you are a good person. This is a matchup you should win. Maybe you're even going to retire like you probably should do for your health. There's every right reason why good karma should reward you, plus the on-paper skill sets and mathematical edges are in your favor. It doesn't matter. MMA gives two shits. It is a brutal game. That's why I emphasize we respect these guys, regardless if they lose or not. And that's kind of why I like this top five segment that I'll be doing later. Not this episode, but later. But anyways, let's move on to Marvin Vettori versus mixed martial analyst web guy Mike Stith. Oh, I'm sorry. That's Antonio Carlos Jr., who is a doppelganger.
Same guy, right?
Same guy.
Six-pack and pecs. It's a little different.
Shout out to Mike Stith, the man behind the scenes at mixedmartialanalyst.com, and good friend to both me and Brian here. Carlos Jr. is who we're really talking about, the favorite, and the justifiable favorite. This was an admitted underdog rightfully pick by me. Yeah, rightfully so. And Vettori, what I like, he had that, what I like to say, the attitude intangible. We talk about physical intangibles and octagon jitters, but octagon jitters are real. And you could be an Olympian like Daniel Cormier, who's competed all your life, and you cannot escape the octagon jitters. But those who seem to escape the octagon jitters are guys with that attitude intangible. Conor McGregor, the obvious example. But when I was breaking down this fight, I compared Vettori a lot to a Jack Hermanson or Emil Meek. That's why I was kind of strong with those guys. Which, by the way, rule of thumb, probably not a good idea to bet debutants, so don't listen to me. But
good point.
A theory that I'm working on, which is, you know, I just
think about how many times we wrote off McGregor.
Absolutely. But a theory that I'm working on, which I just, you know, provided multiple examples off the top of my head, is that, when these guys have that attitude intangible to go along with the athletic intangible, good things tend to happen. And it showed true. But more importantly than that, I was really impressed with Vittori's fight IQ. He ends up losing this fight to a close decision, though I agree, 29-28 Carlos Jr. Things kind of fell apart for Vettori despite after a strong second round. But the fact that he knew when to bail from grappling exchanges, from keeping his fundamentals from underhooks, to when, you know, to get up, he would choose to turtle out, but he would know that turtling out would give his neck, so he was ready to defend the guillotine and front headlock, which he immediately went to a single leg to reverse Carlos Jr. against the cage. He was just doing these beautiful, fundamental grappling chains that you like to see. And granted, it fell apart, but I think he can still, there's still a lot to hang his head high.
Was that an improvement from his previous fights? Because to be honest, I don't know enough about the guy.
He's not fought that much, and he's only 23 years old, so everything is technically
But does he come in? Did he come into that but fight as a stand-up? Because that's the one thing.
His finishes were, I believe, even on both sides. And he was really surprisingly good on the ground, like the Chirico guy from Italy. These Italians are really surprisingly, seeing like guys that are good MMA wrestlers, like a GSP. They didn't come up wrestling collegiately. It's not in their culture, but they're picking it up. The information is out there in our glorious age of the internet.
At 23, he's a mixed martial artist, you're right. He's no longer training one individual martial arts. Yeah,
absolutely. And he learned a lesson tonight, but this was also on my fight to avoid list for that reason. Do you have anything takes coming into this fight, or any, were you surprised anything coming out of it?
I mean, rightfully so, against a guy as big as Carlos Jr., I mean, coming from heavyweight, move down in weight, he's finally kind of filling into his own frame. You know, he no longer looks like this guy who has obviously dropped down in weight class. So he's kind of coming into his own now. I finally feel like he's comfortable enough in there. He's no longer too worried about a loss. So it was good to see him kind of rise to the occasion. But, you know, like you said, he put up a good fight against him. So it was a good fight overall.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I don't think there's too much more to say about that. So let's get to the feature prelim on FS1, which was Johnny Hendricks versus Neil Magny. I had Neil Magny going into this fight. This was before the red flag weight issue intangibles. I just felt his length, his volume, his activity would be trouble for Hendricks, despite making the, trouble making the weight. He's not that big. He's 5'9 for 170. And I felt he was going to be, have issues with that. We saw Gastelum against Magny, and Magny actually, showed a lot of wrestling improvements and promise in his transition game, which I thought could have been something to look out for as well. Magny gets it done. I agree with the scorecards. I'll get your opinion here in a second, but I like to see that the judges rewarded Magny here, despite, I believe, there was a lot of close rounds, but I think the main round in question was round one.
Yeah.
And despite Hendricks getting that control time, he not only didn't get any submission catches, didn't only come close to finishing with strikes, or get any passes for that matter, or advances, but there was barely any attempts for any of all of those items.
It reminds me a lot of the Carlos Condit fight, where he won a very close decision against Carlos Condit due to that very stalemate grappling style. You know, he like we talked about earlier, he kind of went back to the wrestling, which is good to see. It's a good sign to see a Johnny Hendricks to bring back those roots. But we kind of almost forget at the same time that they were also very ineffective. They were effective in controlling the fight. But as far as doing damage, advancing positions, things that matter on a scorecard, it was hard to accept those losses, against a guy like Carlos Condit. We like Carlos Condit.
Yeah.
I like Carlos Condit. So it's good to see, it paid off this time. The judges are kind of understanding that point of maybe it isn't paying off. Maybe a guy being active off of his back is going to pay off on the judges' scorecard. So I feel like maybe this is that point where MMA is kind of catching on, or maybe we're just lucky because it's Las Vegas. Who knows? But we talked about earlier, I kind of missed a lot of the action in this fight due to people coming over and this and that, but it was kind of that. It was just the very boring wrestling style. I'm going to hold you against the cage and slowly grind you out, but not necessarily do much with it. Take you down, not do much with it.
I wonder how much of that is due to no Mark Layman in there, who is one of the best corners and coaches, in my opinion, just because of what he brought to the table and gave. But yeah, absolutely, he didn't do that. And although, you would see, and Rogan alluded to, Magny's elbow was clear of the armbar many times, he was getting quote-unquote submission catches that he probably would have gotten credit for if this were a Naga or a grappling tournament.
Absolutely.
And although he's not a knockout puncher and didn't come close to knocking Hendricks out with one shot per se, he landed more volume, more cleaner shots.
Shakes.
There was a clear process, even though he was moving back to counter. It's hard. You want to assume that the judges know what the fuck a counterfighter is.
We're kind of just stuck on. Well, I guess I would say I am kind of stuck on that old mentality.
Yeah.
A wrestler grapples and controls the majority of the round, and the judges are going to automatically score it.
Well,
not that I was impressed by Johnny Hendricks' performance, or not that I necessarily thought Johnny Hendricks won this fight, but with my catching things as they were happening and what happened, it was kind of shocked by the decision, just based off of my bias of thinking that these judges have no idea.
Well, to your point, those of us who watch the sport for a while, it's like, I'm hoping we're getting to a place of consistency, because it feels like, not just you, myself too, a lot of us have two scorecards. It's like,
yeah,
what retarded judges look for, pardon me for using that word, but or what, who should win the fight. And it's just a lot of times those are two different scorecards, sadly.
Absolutely.
So we're just like, okay, well, which ones are the judges going with tonight?
Yeah, we've said it multiple times. I think this person won, but I think the judges have it this way. It's just a standard. I mean, even the commentators are saying the same thing.
Absolutely. Well, I had a prop on this one for Magny inside the distance at +345 at a quarter unit. And I put also a flyer as well for Magny round three. And I still stand by those, because we saw points where it was leading that way, but Hendricks did himself, although we kind of criticized his wrestling, it also was good to see Hendricks wrestling like that more. It might be too little too late with the streak he's been on, and we'll see where he goes
from
here.
And the question is, obviously, what we didn't bring up is the weight cut. Let's be real here. This is his third time missing weight. We all love cheeseburgers, but, you're a professional. This is your job. It's not like I can show up late for work, or, this is how it's going to be. It's what I sign up for is what I need to show up with. And there's no disrespect. I mean, this is a hard thing to do for these guys, man. And you and I both love food. You and I both love cheeseburgers.
Yes. Yes, we do.
This body I live in is probably 90% cheeseburger at this point. So I feel for Johnny Hendricks. It's just that. It's this. He's got to figure that out. If he's going to fight at 185, I'll be very interested to see But who knows? The Baconator may be resting in peace after tonight.
Shout out to the Baconator. That's a junkie. That's the old Junkie Nation nickname he used to have. That's really sad now in retrospect. Anyways, moving on. We're going to come back. We're going to take a break here, actually. We're going to come back. We're going to break down the main card. We're going to give our thoughts on that because that's where the fun really is at.
The weird stuff is over.
Yeah. All right. Well, stay tuned. We'll be back before you know it. We're just going to do a quick break, and we'll be back with a UFC 207 main card post-fight recap. Cucarachas enojadas. Tech Your Neck Podcast here with my man Brian. This is Dan Tom, your host. We are breaking down post-fight techniques and our plays and picks for UFC 207 for the after-party edition here. Jumping right into it, let's go to Luis Smolka versus Ray Borg on the main card. I had Luis Smolka here. This was before Ray Borg missed weight.
Yeah.
This was a tight fight either way, so I kind of recommended you stand away from this one as far as playing goes. But I did think Luis Smolka's give-and-take style, his ability to cede the small battles to win the overall wars, was going to do him well here. And it didn't. He seemed flat. Excuse me. He seemed deflated. But that was only from what I saw because, as you know, Brian, you can attest to this. I was kind of in transit coming to your house for that fight.
There's a lot going on in those first moments.
There was a lot of possible tequila shots, possible...
Other things happen.
Yeah, things happen.
But it's just, speaking of drinking a lot, I think that Luis Smolka had a rough time this time after losing to Moreno. I think that his mindset kind of changed in this fight. You know, he's normally great at grappling, great at scrambling, and it's good to see. You know, Ray Borg is obviously a grappler. I don't think I've ever seen a Ray Borg fight where there's not a scramble, a great submission attempt, or this or that. But Luis Smolka's hype, he kind of, minus that Moreno fight, he looked great. I mean, rises to the occasion in a random main event slot. All these things, I feel like he might have been in title contention. It's hard to say that considering the, you know, 125 division is very questionable and who's competing for the belt and this and that. But I feel like we definitely both underestimated Borg in this because he does have the great grappling side to the game.
He does. He's a really good back taker, and he's a good transitional grappler. I felt like I gave him credit for that in my breakdown. But, again, I don't want to take away credit from Borg because if you follow my work, you know I use the word dark horses a lot. But Ray Borg and Luis Smolka are both, A, legitimate dark horses, and B, guys who I have credited with both being dark horses in the division. Like you said, Smolka looked great up until the, you know, what you would like to think was a hiccup against Moreno. But then you have an odd performance like this, and it becomes suddenly, again, in our fickle sport of you're only good as your last fight, it becomes a little hard defender boy, Luis Smolka here.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that's our sport, but it's true.
It is true, and it's tough. And I think that weight cut was tough, man.
125. You see that picture of him at the weight cut?
It was tough, and I'll tell you this, and I'll say it now because, you know, it's after the fight. It's not that big of a deal. But I was sitting next to Max Holloway for, you know, MMA Junkie Radio, and I was feeding, you know, George and Go's updates for, you know, who's left to weigh in. At a certain point, it was just Hendricks and Borg were the last people left. And of course, they missed weight. And I told Max it was Borg, you know, fighting your boy. He missed weight when he finally weighed in. And Max thought I was talking about Smolka. And I was like, no. He made weight. And, you know, Max asked me, he's like, hey, did Smolka make weight? He was part of his team. And I was kind of like, wow. I don't want to say anything out of respect. I keep things like that quiet. And, you know, I'm an analyst, martial arts first, even though I do betting stuff. There's a certain line I keep. But when he said that, though, and I feel like I can say some small, stupid detail like that now that everything's said and done.
Yeah,
I don't feel like that's crossing the line. Whatever. Yeah. But he did make weight, but it does make me think that something, you know, happened. Yeah. And I'm not making an excuse for him, nor am I trying to take away anything from Borg, because Borg's
could be
awesome.
It could be the 4 pounds Ray Borg had on him.
Well, no, but it's just, I don't think I, you know, Borg was one of them. That's the funny thing. Borg is the one that missed weight, but Smolka is the one who I don't think should be the weight class. Smolka's my height. I mean, as a 5'9 Hawaiian who we carry a heavier bone structure.
Man, you guys love food.
We love food. You know me. I mean, granted, I'm a bit out of shape and I've gained weight for, you know, medical and irrelevant issues that we're not talking about that now, but I'm 5'9 for the viewing audience and from Hawaii as well. And, you know, I'm pushing 2 bills, and when I'm in shape, I'm 175. And just to see a guy hit the scale at 125 of my height, who has a similar genetic, you know, ancestry, I just don't know how he does it and how much longer he can do it. I believe he's only 25. Your frame grows. So, yeah, that's going
to
be...
Look at Max Holloway, man. When he made his debut in comparison to where he's at now, people think that dude's juicing. It's just the fact that he's grown into an adult, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think he told me he was walking around at 180 and he was sitting next to me. And he's a sizable dude. He looks like the 5'11", the 2 inches, no bigger, no smaller. He looks about 2 inches taller than
me. He sits at 180?
Well, he's a little heavier right now. He's been doing strength and conditioning.
He's a championship weight, baby.
You know? You put on a little more than you... Yeah, you know, he went on his churro...
tour. That's a story of my life, dude. God. Del Taco 24-hour churros is the weakness.
Don't tell Max Holloway. He was giving us a churro school like between breaks. It's not.
Me and Max Holloway get along, man.
Well, it's not a gimmick with Max Holloway. That's what I love about this guy. He really is all about those promos. He's really all about that churro life. But we're not talking about that. I guess we're talking about Smolka and Borg. And yeah, Smolka came up short, so credit to Borg. It'll be interesting to see where both these guys go. Did you have a pick on this one, Brian, going in?
I thought Smolka was going to take it, man. Like I said, maybe I spoke too soon saying you were in the same boat as me, but I feel like I definitely thought Smolka was going to take this decisively. So it was good to see, you know, and no doubt, I mean, anytime I've seen Ray Borg fight, I've enjoyed his fights. It's never been a... Ray Borg has never had this position to beat Louis Smolka. It was just that, in my mind, I thought he was going to take it.
Absolutely. Let's jump to the next fight. Dong Young Kim versus Tarek Saffiedine. In short, I felt I was pretty right on this call with Kim, although I wasn't confident on it. This was another one of the more higher intangible fights on the main card. But essentially what it came down to was I love Tarek. I love his technical styles. I love technical stylists, but he lacks the volume, and he tends to fight on the outside of the fence when he shouldn't. It doesn't suit him.
Especially against a guy like Dong Young Kim.
Yes, who it does suit. It suits a guy like Dong Young Kim's game perfectly. And although, like I said, even if Dong Young Kim's not able to, you know, get off takedowns, because Tarek's grappling and counter-wrestling is underrated. I'm the first to say it, but... Yeah. Even if Kim wasn't going to be successful, I felt he would do just enough to edge it on the scorecards because he'd be fighting essentially at the end of the day on his terms, which makes sense. Go with no guys effective, you got to get the guys pushing the action to have a fight on his terms. And that appeared to be what it was here because it wasn't the most exciting fight. It wasn't a wide stretch for either man. It was kind of close, but I think they got it right. What do you think, Brian?
I have to agree with you there. I feel like Tarek Saffiedine's biggest game is his kicks. I feel like he has a great kicking game and he's great at keeping that distance. Obviously against a grappler like Dong Young Kim, you don't necessarily want to throw those kicks out to be caught and taken down. But we were talking about the awkward footwork of Dong Young Kim during the fight. You know, maybe it had just been so long since I've watched him fight, but he had a very awkward plodding forward, step forward, you know, 1 foot in front of the other type thing, and it just kind of made me wonder, maybe a leg kick would have changed the aspect of that fight, let alone, you know, without the threat of the takedown. I think maybe in those transitions of Dong Young Kim plodding forward with those missteps, he could have caught him off guard, made him off balance, made things a little bit more interesting.
It's tough. I can see your argument there, but then one could also say that maybe... And again, I don't think he did it on purpose because, like we said, Kim does tend to throw himself out of his position normally, no matter who he's facing.
That's just his style.
But it might have actually helped him in this fight because my theory is, you know, maybe that shuffling and out of position, it can make you open for counters.
Yeah.
It can maybe not make your power consistent, but can also make you hard to time your legs for leg kicks when you're stumbling in like a damn zombie.
And
so
maybe he's baiting those leg kicks. You're right.
And then that too, because he's also, that's another reason, because Kim has used those catch kick counters for legs before.
Yeah.
Anyways, not much more to talk about, I think, there, right, my man? Yeah. And we'll move on to the next one. TJ Dillashaw, who was our last prop of the night officially, and our first piece for our parlay, which did hit. That was TJ Dillashaw, who I had against John Lineker, who, you know, I was a little slow to come on the Lineker train, but then I was on it. And not for the same people everybody else was. I was on it for the guy's chin, not for his knockout power.
What a tough son of a bitch his, that guy is.
Huh? Yeah, I mean, his chin is what makes him so dangerous. It's like Super Mario, like I said in my breakdown. It's like Super Mario when he acquires that Star of Invincibility. You just hear that music hit, that little fast jazz beat, and he's coming at you, and nothing is hurting the Savage. And that's why I thought Dominick Cruz was going to, or not, TJ Dillashaw was going to go to his wrestling for a decision, which was my official pick. But I did say the submission prop was worth a look because, again, I thought he was going to go for the takedowns. And although Lineker doesn't turtle out like a wrestler to give his back for chokes, Lineker's not the best defensively. He's not the best ground tactical guy like we saw. Although his defense was surely improved, transition-wise and positionally, he's still suffering badly. So, again, even though Dillashaw did get the decision, as I officially predicted, I still stand by my sub prop, even though it didn't hit, because
it almost happened multiple times.
The path was there.
He got a little desperate at times when he went for that back take.
But he was looking for it.
Can you blame him? Let's be real. That's the right course of action against a killer like Lineker, man.
Well, who did you have coming into this fight? And by what method?
So, I like TJ Dillashaw. But I would also like to see him get KO'd in a weird, terribly dark place in my heart. But
is it because he sags his sweatpants when he weighs in and gives you those sexy ab shots?
I don't know what it is.
Your sexuality a bit.
Maybe it's the fact that he's a 30-year-old man. He looks like a 12-year-old boy. I don't know. It's a lot. There's
it's popular
a lot
in Thailand.
It's just a lot there. No doubt, he's a great fighter, talented. I love watching him fight. There's no style like it. It's hard to not want to watch him fight.
Right. Absolutely,
but
I'm with you there.
The things I would give to see John Lineker KO any man, let's be real. It brings the primal rage out, man. You know, you see a tiny, he's like what the Wolverine character in X-Men should be. A short, stocky, plodding forward killer. He's kind of throwing those fists like he has razor blades for fists, you know? He's kind of just from the hips chucking them at you like he's going to take you out. So it's good to see that, but TJ Dillashaw is very methodical in every movement he makes. Every decision he's making is a good decision. And it was good to see him take him down and bring that aspect to his game because, like you said, we forgot about that side of TJ Dillashaw. He became this great striker against Henan Barao, so we kind of forgot about that. But it was good to see him do that, and John Lineker could have done a lot. The whole, let me do my crunch into your elbows wasn't the best idea to bring your face into someone's elbow to taunt them into maybe perhaps being stood up.
Well, John Lineker also has a John Lineker tattoo, so there's that.
Well, let's be honest. His fight IQ is lacking, so his IQ is probably lacking.
He was bound to get taxed by it sometime. You're absolutely right. And
those elbows were hurting. Let's be real. They were taking damage. Yeah. It didn't affect him physically, but they'll affect him in 10 years.
Absolutely. And that's why I picked against him here. Before we move on to the next fight, impossible, Brian, to deny TJ Dillashaw a title shot now? Or what?
I don't mean to jump here, but only after Cody Garbrandt's call out.
Great point. And on that note, you know what? Let's just jump right into the next fight. Cody Garbrandt versus Dominick Cruz. When you gotta admit you're wrong, you gotta admit you're wrong. But the people that are right, boy, I doubt that there are very few people that were called Cody Garbrandt thought he was gonna outpoint the sports technician with the most dominant high percentage flow chart.
It's
the decisionator, yes.
It's we called it at the beginning. I said, you know what, Dan? I think Cody Garbrandt may be able to upset him.
You called it. I did.
But I didn't call it by decision
means. No.
I said, I think Cody Garbrandt has that chance, that hand speed to land that punch. And he did. And Dominick Cruz is a tough motherfucker for the fact that he almost kneed himself in the face on the way down. He was out that hard. He hit the floor before his head bounced on the canvas. He was already back up. So props to that man. What a champion he is and what he's done for the sport.
Yeah.
But like we said, man, I think we kind of underestimated Cody Garbrandt in this fight.
Yeah, I gave him more of a chance than a puncher's chance. I believe I even gave him more of a chance in my written breakdown for his path to victory than most people did. That said, I mean, I'm still standing by my pick here. I'm not trying to do revisionist history. I stand by my Cruz pick. But yeah, to your point, I did not see it by decision, and more so, it was The reason why I didn't pick Cody Garbrandt, even though I knew he could land those shots, and people said, well, Cruz gets hit a lot in his fights, and Cody Garbrandt you don't want to get hit by. So yeah. Cody Garbrandt's very alive here just by that nature, which held to be true. The problem was that Cruz has such a good pocket awareness. It's not just his economy of movement, that he sees these strikes coming, and like in boxing, they say the strikes you see, or the strikes you don't see, I should say, are the ones that hurt you, and therefore the strikes you see, I don't want to say don't hurt you, which is not true, as someone who's dealt with concussion stuff can tell you, but it does lessen the sting, that's why at least I accredited Cruz taking shots well his whole career. Even when he has gotten hit.
Never been.
And to his credit, you know, you could say, okay, well, I can agree with you there, Dan, but let's say Garbrandt doesn't knock Cruz out. Let's say he hits him or knocks him down a clean time, which we saw. Couldn't that change the trajectory of the fight? Sure, it could have, and that argument could be made for this fight, but Cruz got right back
up.
He didn't win the fight. He didn't win those rounds.
He didn't do enough.
But still, right. but still.
The recovery impressive, was incredible. Man, from incredible. A killer. From a guy who has just put people away.
You saw his eyes go to the Darklands, Brian, and I saw people tweet what you said, so you weren't alone there by that.
Oh, about the early catch. Yeah, that's something we forgot about, is that Cody Garbrandt got tagged in the first round. Hopefully more people realize this, but in the first round, there was a right hook by
that was a check right hook I was calling for, by the way, but yes, he hit him with it perfectly.
Caught him clean on the jaw, and that was a moment I saw in his eyes. It changed. The fight was changed, and for those first two rounds, I feel like Cruz really edged it out due to that, because Garbrandt almost took the rounds off. He was readjusting. He was trying to find his footing. He slowed down. He wasn't moving around a lot. Like they said, get under your wheels again.
Right.
You know, find your wheels. Let's work your wheels. He was almost forgetting about that because of that one punch, I feel like, changed that. And then he also got tagged in the second, a little bit more clean. But after the second round, I think he just took over.
It was a perfect fight for Cody Garbrandt. He showed the mental composure that he didn't show before.
We didn't think that,
And he came out and showing the best game he's never showed before. And the reason why maybe he didn't show it before, and the reason why me and other analysts that I respect didn't see it, or, you know, maybe give Cody Garbrandt as much as a chance as obviously in hindsight he clearly had, was because, you know, when you look at his trends, like, he doesn't show this or that, but also his fights were short.
Yeah.
We didn't have a big sample size to pull from.
Yeah.
So he comes out and does that, but what really gets me, Brian, is that usually Cruz is dictating the terms of offense, whether he is coming forward, he's making you think he's coming forward, he's really essentially playing the counter game, right?
Yeah.
Whether he's countering or he's faking like he's doing offense, because that's only a form to bait, and draw reactions for counters, and he didn't do that. Instead, Cody would reset, literally point to the center of the octagon,
and say, he would follow.
We're going here. These are the terms that are being set, and I am going to counter. And I did not see that. And I am one who actually said,
I think it's a lot of the pride, man. Like I said early on,
pride, but
Cruz came in there a little bit more emotional.
It is true, which was I didn't see coming. I thought it was going to be the complete opposite way. Cody Garbrandt on paper is tailor made, not just stylistically as a striker, but emotionally for Cruz. Yeah,
we thought.
And what I was going to say was, I thought what really surprised me is that not only was he circling and pointing to the center of the cage, is that, like, Cody Garbrandt, first of all, he can counter better than people give him credit for.
Absolutely.
And although it may look like I was completely wrong on this one, if you look back on my Garbrandt versus Almeida, where most people were picking Almeida, I said Garbrandt, not just because Garbrandt, and not just because of his left hook, which ended up doing it, mind you, it was because that Garbrandt is a deceptively good counter fighter. His aggression, his emotion, write that narrative that clearly got the better of me tonight, but get the better of most of us.
Yeah.
And we think, oh, he's only an offense first fighter, but he, although not as cleverly as Cruz, which is why I pick Cruz and not Garbrandt, but he still does things where he will use pressure to create a terms of offense where he can counter, he can capitalize, and he can land his power. And Cruz fell into that. And maybe it was what you were saying, Brian. Maybe it was because he was being emotional, which, again, is another fucking huge surprise.
Name one fight you ever saw Cruz shit talk that much during the fight. Even against his biggest rival in Faber, he never brought that to the cage. It was always before or after. And another thing is this, is we kind of almost got caught up in this hype of alpha, the alpha male team losing to like Hannon Buress. When TJ Dillashaw challenged Hannon Buress for that belt, we all said there is no way TJ Dillashaw is going to take this. Hennenbrow is undefeated for 10 years. Who is going to beat this man? He might be the pound-for-pound greatest fighter in the world. And we completely underestimated TJ Dillashaw's game. And he dismantled that person. He slaughtered him. Not once, but twice. So I feel like it's kind of that. It's kind of like we're used to this older era of alpha male teammates where they're older guys who are part of that tough man, you know. We're going to bring it. No matter what happens, we're going to put on a good show. Chin aside, we're just throwing guns, you know? And so Garbrandt can deceptively on the surface look like that kind of individual where he is this, I'm just going to hit you. I got a six-pack and sweet tattoos, you know? Mm-hmm. He fits the alpha male persona. But I feel like we're kind of forgetting that these are these new MMA guys and not these old-school, hardcore, tough men.
Really, really good point there. And we could probably continue to pontificate on this fight throughout the night. And I think I have a sneaking suspicion, sarcastically, I know we will be revisiting this fight. Not just me, not just you, many of us.
Oh, yeah.
It's one of those fights. So I can't... I can't wait to go back and look back at it so I can talk about it more educatedly. But yeah, I think the trash talk that you said... Yeah, I think the trash talk you talked about, though, I wonder if it was because Garbrandt, you know, started off that. And I'm going to go back and look at it now that you mentioned it. It's kind of sparking something in that first minute. I want to see if the trajectory turn came maybe as early as that.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyways, but we'll move on to the last fight of the night on that night. This was Rousey versus Nunes. We all know what Rousey can do. We all had our ideas of Nunes. Of course, I picked Nunes first round by TKO. That's how I saw it. As much as she's aggressive, and again, with the Cody Garbrandt paintbrush, that aggressive paintbrush, we're like, oh, this guy's going to throw himself out of position. This
and
that.
Rousey's going to counter. But.
No. Nunes has deceptively good footwork. She's not circling in the traditional sense and counterfighting in the traditional sense of a Holly Holm, but she takes these very subtle angles as she circles on the outside, and although she doesn't have a snapping jab, she has a really good measuring jab that has only helped what was already an accurate shot selection, and already the highest knockout rate amongst, you know, female fighters with 9, now 10 TKO or KO victories amongst female bantamweights. I mean, that's insane.
That's crazy.
How did you have this fight going in, and what did you think walking out of it, Brian?
So, obviously, like probably 99% of the people, including casual fans, this was where is Ronda's mentality? I knew this fight was going to be decided from the very first punch. And if we play it back, man, the first punch landed. You saw me react. I said, oh, it's over. The first punch landed. Ronda Rousey's head went back and she said, uh-uh. She was stumbling. She was plodding forward. A lot like Holly Holm. But this isn't Holly Holm, man. This girl took Miesha Tate, who in my opinion is one of the toughest bantamweight women ever to be in the sport. She is tough as hell. She is never looking for an escape in the fight. She is looking for victory, right? Against Amanda Nunes, man, she hit her so hard. It was the first time we ever saw Miesha Tate quit. Before a tap, she quit. She visibly said, I want out of here. And it was depressing to see, but that's the power Amanda Nunes has. And with Ronda Rousey coming from getting her head kicked off and embarrassed and not being able to eat an apple for 9 months because she was worried her teeth were going to fall out, I knew that one punch was going to decide the entire fight. And it did. It was one punch, and then Ronda got tagged and plodded forward and then threw random combinations, hoping she was going to KO her. And it didn't turn out in her favor. And it's embarrassing to see, man. I mean, it's sad to see because, you know, it's Ronda Rousey, man. She brought women's MMA to where it is. But at the same time, it's hard to feel sorry for someone who reacts the way she reacts after a hard loss.
Well, I agree with you in the, you know, as crazy as it sounds, like, I called after the first shot, but it's true. I mean, you could almost say that the Photoshop from, you know, half of round one, Holm versus Ronda Rousey's face to the end of the fight of they, you know, copy and pasted her face right after that first shot that you just said landed because you just saw it on her face.
So,
and I do agree that, you know, Nunes has that power. We saw it in the Miesha Tate fight. Although I will say maybe I'm biased. I don't think she quit. I don't think she knew where she was.
Because that's my
when she tapped, I mean, you saw Miesha turn around and start wrestling like the fight was still on. Like,
yeah, you're right.
But that only actually even, but that in a sense kind of feels your point as well because it just fuels your point is, yeah, Amanda hits hard. She didn't know where she was.
But that's
at.
What I mean. I don't think it was. Think it was like a conscious decision.
No, but yeah,
she said, "I want the fuck out of here."
She just knows. She changes that fight with that power.
Her entire demeanor as a fighter changed with those punches, and that's what I was pointing out.
Yeah, I mean, I remember even saying back before the Sarah McMahon and Nunes fight, and I remember probably saying it to you since we watched most of our fights together.
That, yeah.
Nunes is a dark horse, man. She's a dark horse. And
she's never not looked good except for when she loses, which was after she looked good.
And under these circumstances, it was hard not to bet her. I mean, female fights, to me, kind of feel like flyweight and heavyweight fights as far as the pendulum swings heavily and very unforgivingly, no matter what the on-paper read should say. But yeah, it was hard not to feel strong about a Nunes pick here. You know, as much as I didn't want to be one of those people who forgot about the dominance of Ronda. I mean, I fought Tough Enough, the amateur same organization, the same year as Ronda. Me and Brian both watched her in Strikeforce against Sarah Del Elio or something like
that. And we watched her in Tough Enough.
Yeah, Tough Enough too. We watched her there, and yeah, I mean, we're not just, you know, reading headlines and writing someone named Ronda Rousey off. I mean, both me and Brian here have seen in person her growth. I'm tied to a kind of a grappling lineage. She comes from, you know, Jean LaBelle, who is tied with Gokhar Trevisian. And Gokhar Trevisian was with Carl Parisian. Carl Parisian's only black belt is Neil Melanson, who I'm a purple belt under, without the Black Stallions, who was at Extreme Couture, et cetera, et cetera. So, I mean, there's these weird little family ties to where maybe I should be rooting for Ronda more than I show, but at the end of the day, I'm an analyst here. I'm a martial artist. I love and I respect everybody. So I do my best to call it clear down the middle. I will call biases where they lie, but just to make it no mistake, we're not jumping on this hate talk for Rousey. I mean, we do have a connection and a history with her.
No one likes to see the fall.
Yeah, and as
it's
I tweet,
just
and
it's as I, yeah, the as difference I, how you handle it.
Absolutely, and as I tweeted earlier, I mean, people could criticize her justly for how she dealt with her loss to Holm mentally. And how she came back from it. And even though, you know, 9-1 odd, 99.9% chance that she will never fight again and probably shouldn't and probably won't want to, I will make the argument that it's almost, even with that said, it's almost even more important for her to make the right steps now to accepting things mentally and losses. Not just like a loss in a fight, just for mental health sake. Absolutely. And talking about accepting facts in life. That's what I'm talking about. Because I don't want to see any, you know, you made a, I'll let you talk about the fight and also kind of pontificate on your comment here, Brian, but, you know, you made a comment about suicide, and it's just, it's not something that I take lightly. Clearly, it's not something that Rousey takes lightly. Her family has a history of it, but we all know.
No one likes to talk about it.
Yeah, as somebody who has studied it a bit, mental health, and knows a thing or two about it, though not a professional. Man, people like Rousey and with that history, it puts them at a risk. And then you also got to think, too, as a competitor and a martial artist, I've seen behind the scenes of these fighters who, thankfully, I never had to compete at the level these guys do.
Jesus.
But to experience loss and heartbreak at that level is just something that can crumble and test the character and wherewithal of the strongest people.
The level of embarrassment that one must feel in... And it's not that I think Ronda should feel embarrassed. It sucks that it is the way.
Yeah,
and you're right. And it's one of those things. It's a touchy subject.
But, yeah.
But for someone in her position to have handled the loss the way she did, I mean, let's be real here. Can you think of one person in any sport that has ever handled a loss as terribly as she has handled it?
No, you know,
any sport.
And I made the comparison within our sport to guys like who would handle adversity like Cruz and whatnot. But you're right, absolutely. She definitely handled it in a different way, and it's hard because then you want to give her a part of a pass because none of us have ever experienced anything like her, much less anything these other fighters have experienced.
One, getting to that level,
right? But
two, falling from that
also
level.
Also, even if we were a fighter who is maybe even currently on the UFC roster, we probably still would not understand the pressures Ronda Rousey has had to go through. So we're not, again, I don't want to ramble and rant here, so I'll leave it at this. We're not dancing on any graves here or anything like that, of that nature. You know,
we feel for her.
We're not Nunes like homers, that's for sure. I mean, something like that.
I have no bias with Nunes. I think she's a monster, and I enjoy watching her fights. But the women's division for me is just a toss up, man. Let it be what it is. The more entertaining, the better. But you know, not to touch back on the subject of suicide, but I feel like any individual that could not look at themselves in this way without, like, you know, like, understanding, like, okay, yes, this happened. This is what I signed up for, you know? I've watched so many people in MMA get knocked out. It can never happen to me. That's just an ignorant mindset.
Right.
It's the hurt business, man. This is what you signed up for. It's life or death. And to think, I mean, I've never fought in my life. I'm not a mixed martial artist. I am a guy who enjoys violence in a controlled way. I am never going to walk down the street and think that I can dominate any man. I know damn well that even if I was Anderson Silva, the greatest of all time, in my opinion, there's always a man out there that's going to kick your ass.
Right.
And if you don't have that mentality in your mindset and already know that defeat is only an inevitability of life or competition, you're already losing, you know? And that's her whole problem, is that her mindset was built on this, I'm unbreakable, I'm this do-nothing bitch, I'm this untouchable, I'm believing my own hype. And no doubt she should have believed her own hype,
right?
Because up until the home fight, there was no one better. No one even close.
Yeah.
But it's that. It's like you kind of have to understand yourself before you are in this position.
No, absolutely. And to end, I guess, on a more positive note, I guess to end on that note, I should say, is that what we do have is a new champion.
Absolutely.
We have a very talented champion.
Dominant.
An openly gay champion.
Yeah, great, man, right?
A minority market champion.
Brazilian champion.
There's a lot of things here for the UFC to get behind, but the question is,
what will they get behind?
Will they get behind? Yeah. So I'm hoping they do, because I'm hoping they take the positive out of this. I hope the rest of you listening, by the way, take the positive out of this card. But that was one of them. And this is, I don't disparage or dislike any fighters or take anything personal, whether it's plays or opinions or any of that nonsense. So don't get it twisted. But yeah, I mean, I'm not the biggest Nunes fan. Don't get it wrong here. But at the same time, I can appreciate what we have here in her. And I do feel, especially as somebody who is a big proponent, maybe it's the liberal sides of me and whatnot, but man, I'm all about, having an openly gay champion and all these things. These things are awesome to me, man. I don't give a crap about that. I want more barriers broken down, the better. So I hope the UFC, whether it's a false political hokey-dokey smile or they're genuinely getting behind it, I just hope they get behind it, because I think, you know, Ronda Rousey's going to move on. Hopefully for the better. Hopefully for the healthier, like we said. But Rousey's done, man. Let's get behind these people that deserve it now.
You're right. I think it's a good note to end on as well, man. I feel like she's going to defend this belt for a long time. Shevchenko, who's already beaten her, is definitely her next big challenge. But I think now she knows what to expect.
So she's already beaten Shevchenko. You mean she's already beaten?
Oh, she beat Shevchenko.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so wrong on that. Wow.
Yeah. She came out. She almost beat Shevchenko earlier.
Was it split?
I don't know if it was a split, but it was a little close. I mean, I did score for Nunes, no question.
Okay.
But I think the judges might have made it closer than it needed to be. Essentially, you had
maybe that's
Nunes
why I was
doing the best. Like Shevchenko, she's so tough as shit. People who follow her know I'm a Shevchenko fan. That's probably my most proudest breakdown, was not just calling her over home, because I actually like picked out that one. I'm proud of, I'll just say that.
Yeah.
I don't want to sound like a cocky asshole here, but Shevchenko did unfortunately lost that fight to Nunes,
right.
To a decision. She was beating Nunes at the end though, because Nunes tends to fade which we didn't get to see that this fight,
of course you're not going to see that.
Problems with Shevchenko, man, she's facing probably the worst matchup on paper in Pena, which is weird that Pena didn't want this fight originally, considering that she's an advantage on paper. Anyways, another conversation for another day, which I'm sure we will get to.
Million times over, we'll be there.
But any closing thoughts or anything you want to say to the listeners out there about this card, this podcast, or anything else, Brian?
No, man. I mean, obviously, like I said, don't take anything I said too seriously. I'm just a fan of the sport, and I'm glad to be here, man. I'm glad to be a part of this. I think you're going to do good things here, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
Thanks, man. I mean, I know this is the first episode, technically the second episode, long story on what happened to the first one, so I appreciate those hardcore staying with me. I believe this is going to grow, and whether or not it isn't, guess what? I'm not going anywhere, because I love this shit.
Talking to no one.
I love talking to you. I love talking to the fighters and coaches I know, and I love talking to this, whoever the the F you are behind the microphone, man. The audience listening. So keep listening. I'm going to keep providing content. You can find that content at MMALatestNews.com, MixedMartialAnalyst.com. Find my man here, who will be a frequent co-host on this show. Get familiar with him at BR14. And we will make him tweet more. That's why I'm going to be plugging him every time he's on here, to force him to tweet more.
You're right.
But if you want, you know, if you want to follow me and my content, I do tweet a lot. At the MM Analyst, or follow this podcast at the PYN Podcast. Use the hashtag the Protect Your Neck Podcast to submit any questions we will answer on show, or submit your top fives, which we will post the top five list from both my handle and the podcast handle. We will be breaking down shows before, after, and again, we're open to suggestions. We're still in our growing phase, so please
bring it on.
Share your opinion with us. Share your enthusiasm with a friend by telling one. And until next time, protect your neck.
Yeah, maybe next time we could just limit the amount of alcohol intake.